beautiful day for a podcast. This is Joe, Northeast Iowa, and today's episode of the IVNV podcast is brought to you by proud Patreon supporters like me. Go Cubs!
Welcome to this episode of the IVNV podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I'm joined by one of the other hosts of this podcast. How's your week going, Andy?
Hey, it's going great. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, today was my last day of work for the summer, so now I can join you in saying, oh, it was a great summer day. It's beautiful.
It was very nice.
Delightful. So this is, if this is the first episode of our podcast that you've listened to, these midweek episodes are a little bit different. They're shorter, and Kurt is typically not on these midweek episodes. So I guess if you take the tallest guy out, you have a shorter episode, huh? Sorry.
Nailed it. That's so good.
Yeah. Yep. So if somebody was listening for the first time, they've now decided to turn it off. So, we also release episodes on Sunday evenings. And so those come out Sunday evening, Monday morning. They're ready for your morning commute on Mondays. You can listen to our podcast in iTunes, the iOS podcast app, your favorite podcast app. And if you must, Stitcher, although I would suggest you don't listen on Stitcher, but if you do, that's fine.
I thought you were a big fan.
Oh, no, no. I'll just leave that one alone. And we also have a free IVNV app for iOS and Android, and you can find them in the iOS App Store or the Google Play Store. And the iOS app allows you to receive push notifications, so you will get a notification when we post a new episode. And then, for instance, like tonight, before we went live, I sent out a push notification that we were starting the live broadcast. Before we get started here, Andy, first off, I guess what I'm trying to put into words here is that in the studio behind me here, there's a few things that listeners have sent in. For instance, this Expos hat right here was sent in for the people watching live.
He's pointing to a green screen right now. Right, none of that is real.
Right. That was sent in by Ian from Montreal. And I've got a bobblehead right here, the Rick Monday one that was sent in by Oscar. Got a Smokies baseball up here. Tim gave that to me. I got something new. Well, and then we picked up this Javier Baez bobblehead right here over the weekend. But I did have a listener give me a gift for the podcast. And I've been saving it, Andy, because I would like to get your reaction on it. So are you ready? The grand unveiling.
Yeah.
All right. I got to take my hat off. You ready?
Oh my gosh. A pigeon flew out of there.
Look at that right there.
It's the walk-off bubblegum bucket.
My mom bought me a bubblegum helmet for my helmet rallies.
Well, you're not going to need that tonight. It doesn't look like.
No. So
wow, that's awesome. You can celebrate special occasions in style.
So I got to find a good place to put it so it's visible, but I'll work on that.
Yeah, maybe just to the right of Javi, I think we'll be able to see it at least. Yeah. Yeah, so the giveaway at Sunday's Chiefs game was a Javier Baez bobblehead. I got one too.
Yeah, it's pretty decent.
It is. It's a good likeness of him, I think.
Yeah, no MLB neck tattoo. There you can see the double bubble. Yeah, my mom said she saw that and had to buy it because it was, I don't know. I love it. Thanks, Mom. I had to empty it of all the bubble gum before I brought it over here. But so I should just wear that every episode.
Yeah, probably.
Why not? So let's get into Cubs baseball. The front office surprised a lot of fans by calling up Kyle Schwarber this week. Earlier in the season, Addison Russell got the call up a little sooner than most of us were expecting. And I thought there was a good possibility that we would see Schwarber at some point later this season. I did not really expect it now, but their strategy makes sense, and I like it.
Yeah, heck yeah, I'm into it. Perfect timing, as the Cubs happen to have 5 interleague games in which they'll be utilizing the designated hitter. And so instead of having Mike Baxter fill that role, why not have Kyle Schwarber come up and just get a crack at those games, give him a taste of the big leagues. And that's what they've done. His bat it's ready to play. In the minors, the guy is a career 333, 432, 610 slash line with a 1.042 OPS. And that's a 130 game and 459 at bat career over 2014 to 2015. The Cubs, of course, drafted Schwarber first round. He was their first round pick in 2014. So it's only been a year and just over a week since he was drafted. So his bat is ready. I mean, the guy's been killing it in the minors. So why did they bring him up now? Great question. As I already mentioned, these interleague games will be a perfect chance for him to be able to just get up there and hit and do what he's been doing his entire pro career so far without having to worry about catching or anything defensively. But it shows, as Patrick Mooney said in a recent article, that the Cubs think that he can help them already later this season, you know, just, right. And so it's could be important for them just to give him a little taste of the big leagues now. And so that's what they're doing.
Well, I think to kind of piggyback on what you just said there. I mean, I thought that he would make his way up later this season, especially if they were in contention, just because his bat is so advanced. So I think it's kind of good to bring him up now, you know, partway through the season when there's maybe not quite as much pressure. Imagine if they're in a playoff race in late August or sometime in September, and they decide to call him up then. I mean, that's a lot of pressure to put on a prospect, where right now it seems like Cubs fans are kind of used to prospects coming up. We've already had two big ones this year. And so I think we're kind of used to it. And why not bring him up now and just let him get kind of his dip his toes in the water, kind of get that big.
Get his beak wet.
Yeah. Get that like big media push out of the way. And then go back to Iowa, you know, maybe if there's things that he can identify this week, like, oh man, big league pitching is this, and I was not expecting this. Then it gives him some time to work on those things in Iowa. But I think it's a good move all the way around. And it just shows that, yeah, they do plan on using him later in the season, which is just crazy because, you know, I got to interview him when he was playing with Kane County last year, and it was like at the end of last season. He was in low A, and so it's just kind of like crazy to think that here, or how many games? I don't know. I don't have it pulled up, but I mean, just such a limited number of games between low A to now with him playing with the big league club. And it's just kind of crazy to think that, like, you know, Ian Happ, it would be like if Ian Happ was playing for the team a year from right now.
Yeah. Well, in 2014, Schwarber played at three different levels. He played,
like 5 games at short season for Boise.
Right. And then he played 23 games for the low A affiliate at the time, which was Kane County. And then he was moved up to the high A affiliate, which was at Daytona at the time, for 44 games. So only 72 games total in 2014 in the minors. Now he's had quite a few more games this season already. He's only had 58 this year so far at Tennessee. And so that's 130 games total in the minors. And it's only been just over a year since I drafted him. But I wanted to mention that, you know, it might be a bad thing, like, if he came up now for these, you know, these 5 games where he's going to be the DH and struggled, but he's already developing self-efficacy starting tonight as he's gone 3-for-4 in tonight's game. So, like you said, Corey, I mean, once he gets up with the Cubs later in the season, he can remember, hey, I already was an effective hitter, you know, for those few days, and I can do this.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a lot of fun to see somebody that, when the Cubs kind of started this rebuild, like, for instance, look at a Javier Baez or an Albert Almora. You know, we had to wait like 3 years to see those guys. And now, you know, Chris Bryant came up within, you know, a much shorter period of time. Now Schwarber. And so, and that's kind of the advantage, too, of drafting college bats. They're more advanced, where if you look at Baez and Almora and those guys, you know, they had a lot more development to do. So,
yeah. So, for the rest of the season, after these interleague games, he's going to go to Iowa. So his double A days are done. And as I mentioned before, he certainly has nothing left to prove there. But Theo called his big league stint a pit stop on the way to Iowa.
I like that.
But yeah, I do too. But they also intimated that you should plan on probably seeing him again this season for sure. Theo was also quoted as saying, "We're more convinced now than ever that he's going to catch and catch a long time in the big leagues." So they still want to get him time at catcher, because that's one of their one of the things they've said is that he just needs to have more games behind the plate, like just get more experience back there. But he also says in that same, you know, he was quoted by several media sources as saying that he's going to get some time to work in Iowa in left field. And he, another quotation from Theo was, "We believe in his bat. We think he can help us win some games." So I take that to mean this season.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, if they're going to use him this season, then he does need to play outfield, because if they bring him up, I don't see a point in bringing him up later in the year and just having him pinch hit and come off the bench. It makes sense for you want his bat in there as much as possible. So that would mean him playing in the outfield and maybe catching occasionally, but if they're going to use him later in the season, I think it's got to be in the outfield. I mean, unless Madden was like, "Finally, I got my third catcher back. Jeez, I've been trying to operate this team with two catchers."
But of course, most Cub fans love the idea of him sticking at catcher. And it was encouraging to see Theo say, "We're more convinced now than ever that he's going to catch."
Right.
So that just shows that they have confidence that his development is coming along as a catcher and that he will be an effective big league catcher eventually, which is great because, you know, if they had to stick him in a corner outfielder, at a corner outfield position, that could be kind of harder to figure out where everybody shakes out with Chris Bryant perhaps ending up there and Jorge Soler and, you know, players like that.
But in the meantime, this year,
just to be able to use him, right, like you said.
Yeah. Right. And imagine kind of going into the playoff, you know, if there is a push like late in September, what a great piece to have off the bat or off the bench. I mean, you know, if Coughlin continues to play well and Fowler's, you know, playing well and Soler's out there, it's pretty awesome to be able to, you can play the hot hand and, I don't know, man, it's going to be such a fun, I'm really hoping things, they can just like kind of hang in there. And I really think they're going to, it just feels like it, doesn't it? I just don't feel this team like just dropping off the table, you know?
No. And his presence in the lineup tonight shows how rugged, just I should say his presence makes this lineup.
Oh, man. I mean, imagine if you had Baez in there, too.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, the lineup is just, it's ridiculous. And just to think of what it was 2 months ago to start the season.
Right.
And that's one thing that, you know, at the beginning of the season, I just wasn't so sure that this was a playoff team because I thought, well, the lineup's going to look good at the end of the season. And I thought that the lineup would look more like it did at the beginning of the season. I thought it would look like that a little bit longer than it actually did. But it really, this lineup has transitioned to what it will look like at the end of the season a lot quicker, which has obviously made them much more competitive.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Yeah. I mentioned the interview that I did with Kyle Schwarber, and you can find that at ivmv.com, and then click on the right hand side of the page. There is like these little icons for different interviews that we've done. And Schwarber's is really good. And like I said, I mean, it was less than a year ago. A lot of times I'll interview, like for instance, I interviewed Matt Caesar a few years before he got up to the big leagues. Javier Baez, we interviewed him when he was in low A. So that was like, what, 2 or 3 years before he got called up. So this is kind of like the most, the quickest player that we've interviewed, the one that got to the big leagues the quickest. So it's a good interview, and so I would suggest checking that out. Anything else you want to say about Schwarber, Andy?
No, I think that's it. I'm just excited. I really, really want to watch Cubs games this week.
Yeah.
And I'm having trouble actually just getting in front of the TV and watching one, but
we have to record a stupid podcast on the Cubs.
Right. Yeah, I know. It's a blessing and a curse sometimes, you know, as the team gets more exciting. It's tough to just be talking about them instead of paying attention to their play on the field, but hey, that's the burden that we bear.
Right. So let's look at injuries, and the Cubs have had quite a few injuries that have impacted the team. There are teams that have suffered more injuries, but the Cubs have quite a few, and I thought this might be kind of a good time to go through those injured players and look at when they might return, because I think we're going to see some kind of start filtering their way back here fairly soon. So DeNorfi is back, of course, and that's good because that's outfield depth that the Cubs needed. And then the outfield depth will be significantly improved when Jorge Soler comes back. He went on the DL on June 3rd, about 2 weeks ago, with an ankle injury. He's been, I'm sure if you're following Cubs stuff on Twitter, he's been seen on the field in warm-ups and stuff like that, wearing a boot. Yesterday, which was Tuesday, Kerry Muscat tweeted that he was headed to the batting cage to test his swing, and that there's no official update on his status. So I would guess once he's feeling good, Soler will probably do a few rehab games. So I think we're probably at least a week from seeing Soler return. That's probably the best case scenario. I think it would be really nice if the Cubs could get him back for that weekend series in St. Louis next weekend.
Yeah, for sure.
That would be ideal.
For sure. I'd love to see one of those bombs that he hit at Busch last year again this season.
Yeah. And so then the Cubs also have a few infield guys that are still on the disabled list. All-star candidate Tommy La Stella.
Yeah, man. Can't wait. ASG worthy right there.
I haven't heard much on him. You'll remember that he was injured with like an oblique injury. And then in the middle of May, he re-injured it while rehabbing at AA. I don't think that, obviously, La Stella is probably not going to come up and take anyone's spot in the starting lineup, but he's probably a better bench option than Mike Baxter or Jonathan Herrera. So I'm not sure when he's going to come back, but I would think, especially since he kind of like re-injured it while rehabbing, I think they'll take it slow with him.
And there's no reason not to, really.
Yeah.
For now.
Right. The other injured infielder is Mike Olt. You'll remember that he got hit by a pitch that fractured his wrist early in the season. And he's kind of in a similar situation as La Stella in that he had an early season starting spot, but it's hard to see him bumping Bryant or Coughlin out of the starting lineup right now. But again, he'd be a good bench piece and add depth to the bench. I think ideally the Cubs would probably like to put him at AAA when he's healthy, showcase him a little bit, maybe try to move him in July. If that's not an option, then and hopefully Olt can kind of tap into some of that potential. He'd be another great. What's that?
He could help like one of the single A teams in the playoffs. Right.
I forgot about that. But he is another guy that would be a great bench piece for a playoff run. Imagine if your bench was like Mike Olt, Tommy La Stella, and Kyle Schwarber. You know, I mean, that having some guys to use then. much better options than, like we said, than Baxter and Herrera. So he can play third outfield. He's probably the best backup option for Anthony Rizzo at first. Taylor in the chat said he honestly forgot about Mike Olt.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking that. Like, I wonder how many fans have just kind of had them fly out of their consciousness.
Yeah. So I read a pretty entertaining piece at thecubreporter.com. And so Olt played an extended spring training game, and he played for both teams in the game. So it was Eugene Emeralds, the new short season low A affiliate that took Boise's place. And they were playing the Mesa Cubs in like an intra-squad game. And so this particular game was supposed to be a 7-inning game, but it was called after 5.5 innings because the pitcher that was scheduled to throw got called up to South Bend during the game. So Olt was the DH for Mesa, and then he played third base for Eugene. And the article says that Olt high-fived himself for doing his part to help Eugene rally to win the game and cursed himself for not doing enough to prevent the Mesa Cubs from losing. And it said that the attendance for that game was 5.
Oh, nice. That's pretty good.
So Arizona Phil, AZ Phil, he does great write-ups on the happenings there in Mesa over at thecubreporter.com. I love it that he includes the attendance for those games. And it's usually, I don't know, single digits, sometimes 2. So and also another player that's injured and on the DL, Neil Ramirez, also appeared in that same spring training game, extended spring training game. He's now doing a rehab assignment with Double A Tennessee. Went to the DL early in the season with shoulder inflammation. Sounds like Ramirez will rehab for a week or two and then join the Cubs maybe at the very end of June or early July. And it would be nice to see Ramirez join the bullpen. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, heck yeah. I really like Ramirez, as I've made perfectly clear before. But the bullpen is better with him in it.
Yeah. And then sticking with pitching and kind of wrapping things up here, Jacob Turner, he's working his way back from an elbow injury that he suffered in spring training. He's also rehabbing with Tennessee. He's pitched in 2 games so far with Tennessee. His first game, he pitched 4 innings. He gave up 2 runs on 3 hits. And he had a stronger showing in his second game, which was Sunday. He pitched 5 innings, didn't allow any runs, and only gave up 2 hits. So we talked about Turner coming back an episode or two ago, and I think that the Cubs will leave him rehabbing as long as they can. With him only throwing 4 and now 5 innings, he needs to be stretched out a little bit further if they are looking at that number 5 spot in the rotation. Like I said before, he's out of options, so the Cubs will need to make a decision with him, and that could mean him joining the rotation or the bullpen, really.
Yeah, and I've already said I'd like to see him get a shot at the rotation, but
Wada pitched pretty well tonight.
Wada might be pitching himself, you know, kind of back into, or maybe solidifying his hold on that spot tonight.
Yeah. Good to have options though, especially for sure, that back into the rotation. And anything can happen, you know, with injuries and stuff like that, obviously, as we're seeing. So we mentioned the Javier Baez bobbleheads and that we got in Peoria when South Bend played there. Went to that on Sunday right after we recorded our Sunday night episode. It was a lot of fun. We met up with Michael from Galesburg. Luke Jett was there. Tim and Katie from Decatur. Tad was there. We got to meet Chris, who was going on the bus trip. Am I forgetting anybody? Seems like that's who we hung out with.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah. So we talked before we went about how we were going to do interviews, but I said before we went, I kind of like, you know, put the disclaimer out there that you never really know for certain that you have an interview until you're doing that interview. And sure enough, the interviews did not work out. But I am working with South Bend to reschedule those. So I think that they will be happening, just not in person like we expected. Any thoughts on that South Bend game, though? It was our first time seeing South Bend this season.
Yeah, it was pretty fun to watch Gleyber Torres. The guy went 5 for 5 in the game, and it was pretty amusing to me because the Chiefs had chosen him as a promotion their pick for this promotion. If this player strikes out, everybody in Section 106 or something like that gets a free sandwich from Hardee's. And so I remember I said to Luke Jett, I said, I hope he goes 4 for 4. I think he's going to go 4 for 4 today. And sure enough, gets a hit every at bat, including a homer. He came kind of close to hitting for the cycle. And his 5th at bat, I was kind of hoping he would get a walk. So my 4 for 4 prediction would still come true. But no, he had to, just for good measure, he had to go out there and get another hit. And
that was his double, wasn't it, where he got thrown out at third?
Yeah, he got thrown out on that one. He tried to stretch it into a triple. But I'll say, too, like, the dude looks pretty smooth on defense, too. His shortstop looked fairly effortless.
Yeah, he looked very smooth at shortstop. And it's just crazy to think that kid's only 18 years old, you know? So, I mean, low A guys are young, but 18 is like, I think I looked and he's like 3.5 years below, like younger than the league average.
Yeah.
And really just kind of dominated that game.
Yeah, it's insane. So that was really fun to see him. And the other player, Cale Brockmeyer, one of the other guys we were going to interview, catcher / first baseman, that's having a pretty darn good season this year, went deep as well in the game.
Yeah, and it's worth mentioning that was Torres's first home run of the year.
Oh, yeah.
And he got all of it. I mean, he looks like he could develop some power. He doesn't look like a slap hitter, or, you know, he didn't get cheated on that one. I mean, he ripped it pretty good.
Well, yeah, he looks like he's going to be the kind of player that drives the ball regularly, but whether that's, you know, that's going to translate to a lot of home runs, I don't think so. Yeah. But I mean, he's going to hit some home runs. There's no doubt, just the way he drives the ball.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything. I mean, and it was cool to see South Bend win. So South Bend, that Peoria is now the Cardinals affiliate. So it was nice to see the Cubs beat the Cardinals, no matter what level of baseball it's at.
Well, yeah. I mean, considering we went to see the Iowa Cubs play the Memphis Redbirds and get stomped by them, it was kind of nice to see the tables turned, you know, among different affiliates. I mean, Cubs and Cardinals affiliates at a lower level.
Yeah. Apparently, the Peoria Chiefs hadn't really hacked into the South Bend system to get the advanced scouting stuff or anything.
I guess not. It's going to trickle down to each level, so it's probably will...
Right.
Hit low A last.
right. Do you want to talk about that at all? I mean, I'm sure everybody listening knows what we're referring to.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we could mention it, that news broke, let's see.
I think it was yesterday, Tuesday.
Yeah, the 16th. Yeah, yesterday, Tuesday, that the Cardinals are being investigated by the FBI for hacking into the Astros database, their proprietary database. And it sounds like they traced the hacking back to a house that some Cardinals officials or employees were living in during spring training, or staying in during spring training. So this is a pretty serious situation. Of course, a lot of members of the media and, of course, Cardinals fans aren't taking it as seriously as it probably is, you know, as it probably is.
Well, it's obvious people are just jealous that they're so good.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like the guy holding the sign that said, if you can't beat them, call the FBI. So anyway, this could have pretty serious ramifications. It's the first instance of a professional team hacking another professional team.
I did touch base with the Cardinal fan that I work with. Obviously, he's off for the summer, but I sent him a text message as soon as it happened. And I will say, you know, he seemed to be pretty disgusted with it and was very hopeful that there's, you know, the accusations are not accurate. And just because, so I don't want, I guess basically what I'm trying to say is not all Cardinals fans are the, everyone's just jealous because we're so amazing. That there are some Cardinals fans out there that are fairly horrified that this could have happened. And it's important, you know, it's beyond, I've heard a lot of people like kind of compare it to like stealing signs, you know, it's kind of like the gamesmanship and stuff like that. But I mean, this is like a federal, this is the FBI, you know?
Right. It's not.
Although the hacking, I mean, it appears that the hacking really was just like
figuring out passwords, figuring out, or knowing passwords, because
I should call the FBI on my kids for always hacking into my iPad.
Of course, the Astros general manager now used to work in the Cardinals organization, Jeff Luno.
Right. And he hadn't changed his passwords, apparently.
I guess not. And of course, you know, Theo and the Cubs brass have been asked about this, and they've been joking about changing their passwords. But the New York Times article said, and I quote, law enforcement officials believe that hacking was executed by vengeful front office employees for the Cardinals, hoping to wreak havoc on the work of Jeff Luno, the Astros general manager, who had been a successful and polarizing executive with the Cardinals until 2011.
Yeah, well, this will be really interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, there's a lot of things that I think are interesting about it, just how it happened, the culture that would allow something like that to happen, who did it, and then also, like, how is it punished, and how does this, if it's an FBI issue, is this where, like, somebody could actually do, like, jail time, prison time? And if that's the case, is it individuals or are the Cardinals punished at all? I mean, it's going to be real interesting to see at what levels it goes to and how high up in the organization and who's involved.
Yeah. So I'm sure more details will emerge. I saw somewhere today that several Cardinals execs had, quote, lawyered up. So we'll see where it goes.
Yeah. We do have a few listener questions here. You can send us questions through our app, through the phone or email in the app, or you can email Corey at ivmv.com, or you can call our voicemail line. That's 309-517-0624. Go ahead and just program that into your phone, 309-517-0624. And if you're ever, you know, you're watching a game or listening to us talk or anybody else, sports talk radio or anything, and if you have a thought on the Cubs, just leave a voicemail and we'll plug it in at the end of the show. We normally try to save our questions for the Sunday night episodes, but we do have a few here that we can do on this episode. Mike is at LeoSammy2134, and he said, with Schwarber up, who in the Cubs system are you most excited to see in the MLB? I know he's young, but I say Gleyber Torres. What do you think, Andy?
Well, yeah, it's hard to argue with that notion after seeing him play this past weekend. I'd love to see him up with the big league team eventually here. Other than him, though, I've always wanted to see Carl Edwards Jr. pitch, and we didn't get to when we were at Iowa. And I'd love to see his stuff in person. So he would be another pick for me. Albert Almora, after seeing him in spring training, I'd love to see him get a chance eventually. And really, you know, any number of the other pitching prospects the Cubs have too, like Dwayne Underwood, Pierce Johnson, Jen Hosang.
Dwayne Underwood Jr., I believe
you
mean.
Oh, yeah, my bad, Jr.
Right.
Sorry, Senior, if you thought I was talking about you and you're listening. I did mean your son, so.
I don't know if you said him, but I think the, I mean, I'm interested in the, you know, I'm interested in seeing Gleyber Torres, but he's 18 and I know it's a few years away. So I think, like, if I'm looking at right now, I'm interested. I'm excited to see Javier Baez. I guess that would have to be my answer now. You know, in 2 months, maybe or something.
Yeah, boy, so unfortunate the timing of that injury. He's playing well. He seems to be getting it figured out a little bit here at the plate, and then has that injury that takes him down for 6 to 8 weeks. And we're just about 2 weeks deep into that time span. So there's still quite a ways to go for Javi.
Yeah. Josh from New Jersey asks what our favorite Chicago beer is. And then he asks what month would be best to go see a Cubs game this year. I would say if you can, I don't know, maybe I was trying to think of like, I mean, we're going to a game in September and it's like, it could be really exciting if it's like in the middle of a playoff race, or it could be kind of depressing if for whatever reason they're out of it. So I was kind of wondering maybe if August would be a fun month, then you're kind of have a better chance to see a fun game that actually matters. I think if the Cubs are out of it and they're not going into the playoffs, I think they'll still technically kind of be in it until maybe like the last week of the season. So I think you're good to go anytime.
Yeah, but I like that idea of, you know, going later in the season, you have a greater chance of seeing meaningful games now.
Yeah.
It is very hot, you know, especially if you're sitting out in the bleachers or something in July and August. So that's something true to keep in mind. September might be a little bit more tolerable if you wanted to try the bleachers, but I don't know. You know, anytime the Ivy's in now, the bleachers are all open. I think anytime now is a great time to go.
Yeah.
As far as Chicago beers, and Goose Island Matilda. I think I like what Revolution makes by and large. Anti-Hero is one that I go to.
That was going to be my choice.
Oh, okay.
No, I mean, I'm agreeing with you. I'm not saying no, sorry. You have to pick a different one.
Oh, well, one other one, if, you know, not strictly Chicago, but Northwest Indiana, Three Floyds makes some pretty good stuff. Gumball Head, Zombie Dust, Alpha King. So that's all good stuff. So try those if you have a chance.
Yeah.
It's hard to find sometimes.
David says, guys, especially Andy, I'm getting caught up on episodes today, so apologies for the delay, but wow. Good job, Andy. I've been meaning to ask where you get your music. The ending music is really good. How about your opening? It's pretty badass too. I had a good feeling for this season and wanted to know what other fans were thinking. That's how I found your podcast. When I first started listening and heard the opening guitar, that's when I knew this podcast would be great. I was right. Keep up the good work. So, Andy, I mentioned this on an episode a couple weeks ago, but Andy, you wrote the music that is at the end of the episode. The music that's at the beginning of the episode is actually our friends that are in the Lion in Rome is the name of their band. I believe they have a band camp out there, and that's one of their songs.
Yeah, they're pretty easy to find online if you look. Might have SoundCloud too, but Bandcamp for sure. I know they're on there. So check out the Lion in Rome.
And I kind of think, I'm not positive, but I think they kind of wrote that song for the podcast. I don't know. Maybe I made that up.
But anyway, thanks for the kind words, David, about my song. And I do have a SoundCloud account that will be... I will have a lot more songs up there pretty soon. I'm going to have a Bandcamp page here eventually, and it's going to be under the name Hapless Captain. So keep a lookout for that if anybody who likes the music, and I appreciate you saying something that's very helpful to me.
Yeah, it's a good song. Perfect song for the end of the episode. Real quick, I want to look at Twitter. See if there's anything there. At Rub-A-Dub Cub says, do you guys want to see Bryant get some more left field starts? His arm accuracy is worrying me. It's always pulling Rizzo into the runner. I think that's something. Didn't you and I talk about that in person, Andy? Weren't we talking about the fact that Bryant's throws kind of cause Rizzo to cross in front of the runner?
Oh, yeah. We were just talking about that the other day. Because we were just talking about how it seems like Bryant is having some troubles at their base. Whether it's, his throws making Anthony make awkward stretches and contortions just to catch them, or he's been double clutching a lot, you know, just like pounding the glove one too many times sometimes, it looks like to me, before he throws.
Right.
So maybe that's because he's working, you know, kind of aiming his throws a little bit more than he should be instead of just snapping it off. I don't know.
Yeah. I would like to see him get a little more playing time in the outfield, just so that if later in the season Madden has to kind of shift some people around to fit people in, you know, they have some recent experience in different positions and stuff. I wouldn't mind just seeing that kind of happen in general.
Yeah, for sure. No, you know, I think that's about it. But like I said, looking forward to watching some of the games this week as Kyle Schwarber will continue to get work as the DH. And he's now, what, 4-for-5 tonight in tonight's game?
Yeah. It's a good start to a career.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
It just proves, you know, what they've been saying all along, that his bat is ready to play.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening. This episode was brought to you by all of our Patreon contributors. Patreon is a way for our listeners to help us keep this podcast going financially. You can help us out by giving as little as $1 a month. It's really kind of pocket change for you, and it really does make us make a difference for us. It helps us pay the podcasting bills, and it helps us improve everyone's IVMV experience. You can check out the campaign at patreon.com/IVMV. That's patreon.com/IVMV. So the Cubs wrap up this Indian series tomorrow, and then they head to Minnesota for the weekend. It'll be cool to see, like you said, Andy, what Schwarber can do between now and his trip from trip from Minnesota to Des Moines. That's what I'm trying to say there. this little pit stop that he's on. So we will be back on Sunday to talk about these games. And until then, go Cubs.